Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
On tonight's episode of Speedway Soccer, we break down an MLS signing, the U.S. Open Cup match, and our upcoming weekend match against Charlotte Independence. This is Speedway Soccer Pod. Hey everybody, welcome into tonight's episode of Speedway Soccer. We're on the Beautiful Game Network, brought to you by Golden Goal Press and Roughneck Scarves. This is Davey Shepard. I'm here tonight with Jonathan Slape and Ben Wright. Hey, we're all remote tonight, but we wanted to make sure we got an episode out because there's been some really exciting news released today, probably the biggest piece we've had in quite a while. Ben, why don't you start us off, man?
Yeah, so I mean, it's definitely just in terms of money spent, it's definitely the most expensive signing Nashville's had so far. So on Thursday afternoon, Nashville SC announced that they had signed David Akam from Columbus Crew, and they sent $350,000 in general allocation money and $100,000 in targeted allocation money, which, I mean, we'll need to get into all that at some point. But basically, they spent $450,000 to bring him in. And, I mean, he's been a pretty solid and proven winger at the MLS level. He played at Chicago for a couple years, was really good there. About 2 years ago, got traded to Philadelphia and kind of dropped off a little bit. But then this season has played really well. I think he has 4 goals and 4 assists in 9 games. And where it gets weird was just a week ago, he was traded to Columbus Crew, who spent a lot to get him and are now turning him around and sending him to Nashville. And it looks like that was their intent all along. It was just to get him for a season and send him to Nashville. So he won't come to Nashville until January 2020. He'll play the rest of this season in Columbus.
Yeah, so it was the trade from Philly to Columbus was for $500,000 in allocation money. So basically it was they're paying $50,000 in allocation money for that loan
on an international spot, correct?
And an international spot, but Columbus wasn't using that international spot. But yeah, like, right. Ben said, Jonathan Tannenwald, when the story broke, did mention that it had been the plan all along for Akam to end up in Nashville. One of the things that, because I've seen a couple comments like, oh, this is his, you know, Nashville will be his fourth team in, you know, the better part of 3.5 years. Does this mean this guy's a locker room cancer or like a locker room issue? And I think that's, you know, I don't even think that's part of the conversation. I think it's more of just, you know, we, Nashville, Mike Jacobs, Gary Smith, and Ian Ayres saw this opportunity to go out and get this guy. But we don't know a whole lot more as to the whys, but, you know, they saw an opportunity to get something which, you know, could prove to be at a steal and someone that's going to be able to contribute to Nashville SC at the MLS level on day one.
Yeah, so I think probably one of the just, you know, more noticeable things for me is that right off the bat, it's a guy who is – shown that he's currently MLS quality, right? We have players who have proven in the past that they've been MLS quality, MLS champion quality even. We have young players who we think are proving that in the future they're MLS quality and hope to make that jump. But this is the first signing that is, hey, this guy's in the league right now, cutting it. And so I just think on a very, very surface level, not even looking at stats, which I think if you look like things like goals per minute, he rates very, very well. But if you just look at it totally on the surface, not knowing anything about the league, if you're a fan sitting at home who's new to NSC, new to the whole thing, this is a guy who is in the next league up right now playing pretty well. So that's just, I think that's a good thing, you know?
Yeah, he's a guy who would start for probably, I don't know, I would say two-thirds of the MLS teams, if not more. And the teams he doesn't start for, he's probably the first guy off the bench. And when, I mean, like, Columbus got him a week ago, and, I mean, the conversation around the league is that it's a signing that makes Columbus a contender for MLS Cup. I mean, that's the level of player he is. And I know the past 2 years that he hasn't lived up to kind of the hype that he had when he signed with Philadelphia, but I mean at his best he's one of the more consistent players in MLS. So yeah, it's a great signing for Nashville.
Yeah, and I'm going to say something that may be a little bit of an unpopular opinion maybe amongst the fan base, but I honestly would rather him stay in MLS and to be playing at that high level than coming down and playing in USL, because we know that, or at least we hope that most of this, it's going to be a completely new team. So it's not like he's missing out on chemistry. And I honestly think that Fernando Adi, when he came down and spent a half season at Cincinnati, I think that hurt his game in the long run. And I mean, he's had his off the field problems as well, but I like the idea of a guy that's going to go play for a team that, you know, is a contender. He's going to be playing at the high level, and then he's going to come. He's not going to have to readjust to a different league coming into the season.
Ben, currently no statement from the club, right, on why he's staying up, if that was the original plan, if we fought for him to come down, nothing like that, right?
Yeah, nothing on that. May potentially hear something from them in the next couple of days, but yeah, as of right now, nothing.
Got it. Does that put a pin in it for the signing, guys?
Yeah, I think that about wraps it up.
Okay, so that was one exciting piece of news. The other exciting one is that we stayed alive in the U.S. Open Cup. We kept our kind of pretty good record in that tournament alive. It was a 3-2 victory over, I'm going to mess the name up, Tormenta 2, is that right? That was like the
South colloquialism. Georgia Tormenta, South Georgia Tormenta FC 2.
There you go. I knew it was a mouthful. Hey, listen, I'm just going to say a few things. So when you're playing these earlier teams earlier in the tournament, you never really know what's going to turn up, but that was a good roster, Ben. They had some really talented players throughout the lineup. The number 10, the number 8, the number 6, the 9 got a goal. I was very, very impressed with the quality of that team for them being a championship side, a 2 side in the USL.
Right, yeah. If I had just been watching it and had no knowledge of either team, I would have assumed that they were at least like a USL League One team. I mean, they were really impressive, and I think that's just kind of what you get in the tournament. You have underdogs who know that they're underdogs and probably aren't going to advance, so they play with, like, it's a cliche, but they play like they have nothing to lose. And I definitely feel like that was true of Tormenta. They were really impressive.
Yeah, I agree. So again, it's a 3-2 victory. I thought we kind of had our foot on the throat there. Thought it would be wrapped up. We went up 2-0 pretty quick. And then they kind of went to sleep, right? Ben, we said in the press box that the game kind of fell apart for a little bit. It just lost all pace. It was really kind of back and forth with us getting some goals early. And then it kind of just went quiet. So, I would have liked to have seen us assert dominance better. You know, it wasn't meant to be that night, I guess, is the best way of saying it.
Yeah, I mean, Nashville had chances to really kill the game off. I mean, in his post-match press conference, Gary Smith said they should have scored 3 or 4 or 5. And I think it was just – I don't think they took their foot off the gas necessarily, but I mean, it was just it was kind of a strange game at times, and I think that if – Nashville had finished like they probably should have, I don't think it would have felt as tight as it did. because, I mean, really, Tormenta scored off of their two best chances of the night, and Nashville had two or three solid chances that they just like that they let slip.
Yeah, I agree completely. There was that ball that was played like kind of in the back of Lancaster's feet when he was breaking in space. Lancaster let another one go in front of goal that probably could have gone in. Lebo scored but was ruled all sides in what was a pretty tight goal, but I think it was the right call ultimately. So, I mean, yeah, I think we really just grabbed a hold of it. And probably the biggest storyline of the night for me well, actually, there's two, I think, Ben. One is that we kept Wynn and Lancaster rolling. They both performed well in two performances in a row. Belmar came on later. He played well as he played good as well, but there just wasn't that much to happen at that point in time. The other storyline is that Derek Jones got his first start, played very, very well. I thought he was a good performer. Was really, really happy with his game. Dynamic player in the middle of the field. Definitely not afraid to make runs. So I enjoyed seeing him.
And a day after arriving in Nashville, no less. So yeah. It was an impressive performance, and I think it helps. I mean, he played with Bolu Akinyoye before at Bethlehem Steel, and he mentioned that in the post-match conference that he just felt comfortable with him, but it was a good performance and a really good way to kind of get his Nashville career up and running.
Slape, one last piece of news before we head into the break here in a second. Announcement from the club this morning in an email to season ticket holders. About some matches being played in Nissan Stadium.
Yeah, so October 12th is the second game that we're going to see there. So we're going to play NCFC at Nissan Stadium, which is the second to last game of the regular season. So another big push, you know, looking forward to MLS. But the date that I feel like a lot of us were probably, you know, thinking would be a Nissan game was the game on July 27th against Indy 11. That's the only game that we've seen on the schedule that didn't have a time listed. But I mean, I think it's one of against one of our top opponents, a team that, you know, preseason everyone was talking about, you know, it's either us or Indy looking to win the East, a team that has some good traveling support. So I'm super excited about it because it'll be another chance just to get more people into the game and get to experience a Nashville SC game. We saw last year that when it's a big game at Nissan, it feels bigger and feels more important, but then also gives the club, you know, some dress rehearsals with Nissan Stadium logistics.
Yeah, and I think obviously the Indy date was circled for a reason. It's a big game, big opponent, team who played us very, very well last year. I think the other one at the end of October, in my head, I see that as kind of a push towards the end of the regular season. I think the front office expects for this team to be in competition for the number one seed in the East, definitely home playoff games, and to go from a big game at Nissan drawing hopefully around 20,000 people because people fill bigger spaces. You know, we had 18 plus there twice last year. To have a game like that there and then head back over to Nissan for a game against Atlanta United 2 in the last week of the regular season and then right into a home playoff game, I think is a really nice flow there at the end of the season and would help lead to some increased ticket sales and awareness for the club that, hey, you know what, the playoffs are almost here. Don't forget about us. Come show up. It's not just next year MLS. Playoffs are right now. Come see us win a championship.
And not only that, the club has, you know, they have put out that they're going to season ticket renewals and reserving for, you know, for MLS is going to kick off in the summer. So, I mean, what better way to say like, hey, you've had a great time, you know,
yeah,
grab season tickets.
Yep. That's exactly right. Hey, listen, we're going to take just a really quick break here in a second. When we come back, we're going to have a quick interview. Slape sat down with the guys from Talking Jacks to talk about the match this weekend. We'll have that for you in just a little bit. Just so you know, at the beginning of that piece, they asked some questions about NSC specific, work through some of that. So Slape answers their questions, but then we dig into the meat of the upcoming match. So be sure to stay tuned. Again, this is Speedway Soccer Pod on the Beautiful Game Network, brought to you by Golden Goal Press and Roughneck Scar.
This episode of Speedway Soccer Pod is brought to you by Taylor Street Coffee and Tea. Taylor Street Coffee and Tea is a new family-owned coffee shop tucked away in Germantown, serving coffee from Crema Coffee Roasters and tea from Firepot Nomadic Teas. Check them out at 100 Taylor Street, Monday through Friday, between 8:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. They're located inside an Art Collective building, so check out their Instagram page to find them, at Taylor Street Coffee. Drop by, drink up.
All right. Well, welcome. We've got Jonathan Slate from Speedway Soccer. He is a writer slash podcaster extraordinaire for Speedway Soccer and specifically about Nashville SC, of course. Welcome to the show, Jonathan. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty well. How about you guys?
Doing okay, I guess. Yes. We got our rants
soccer,
out. So.
Soccer aside, we're doing great.
I was gonna say, you guys had a bit of a rough Tuesday.
Yeah, the rough Tuesday, rough Saturday before wasn't great.
Rough Wednesday.
You just had a rough season.
Rough season. Yeah.
It's been a tough like first 2 months, but the standings are overrated. Open Cup's overrated. Everything's overrated at this point. But yeah, the first question I was wondering is, what is it like to win? No, I'm joking. We're not going to ask that question. You don't have to answer that. I'm sorry. I had to do that. But yeah, so how would you describe the season for Nashville SC so far? Just like in a quick sentence, how would you describe the first part of the season for y'all?
In a sentence, I would say it's been pretty good, but there has been some, you know, disappointments and some struggles along the way.
So what do you think has been, and I've kept track a little bit with Nashville SC, but what do you think has been the main issue for Nashville SC here, or point of a place that the independents could exploit for Nashville SC?
It's definitely going to be goals on set pieces. If you look at where Nashville has struggled this year, we started off the season with a 2-0 win against Loudon at home, and then we had St. Louis come to town and gave up a late set piece goal from a foul outside of the box. We had a decent go at it, but then, you know, just last week we had a, you know, disappointing goal that we gave up on a set piece against Tampa Bay. So, I mean, those have been two key losses and key points dropped, especially the St. Louis one with it coming late. Our other kind of disappointments have been just, you know, Charleston wasn't pretty. We lost 3-1 there, but that was more just, you know, there was a few individual mistakes. But I would say if there was any place that that Charlotte could exploit, it would be, you know, defense on set pieces.
And then what would you say is the positive for Nashville SC this year?
I mean, Daniel Rios has without a doubt been the positive.
I was afraid you'd say his name.
Yeah, which I'm sure I know you guys are quite familiar with. But yeah, no, that was, you know, if we look at what happened last year, was, you know, we created middle of the road chances as far as, you know, number of chances created, but we weren't converting them. Nashville ranked, I think, second to last or third to last in chance conversion rate. And so we weren't converting chances. And, you know, having Rios, who has, you know, been there from the get go and has been converting chances, he's got 7 goals so far around the year, has been great. Lancaster's had some injury issues, so he hasn't really hit the ground running, but the highlight has definitely been Lancaster and Rios and to a lesser extent Carlton Belmar.
So last question for me here is, how have those new pieces mixed in there? Because I know Belmar, I believe I listened to the most recent Speedway Soccer podcast when they played Swope Park, and it sounded like he just recently has kind of found his footing. But Belmar, Rios, I'm forgetting a couple other names. But how have those new pieces fit with the club?
So we started off the season, Gary Smith was playing a 4-3-3, and he was trying to force, and this was when Lancaster started off the season healthy, he was trying to force everybody in, so he was... Lancaster got pushed out wide to the right, which doesn't fit his his skill set. We've probably seen the most success in a 3-5-2/4-4-2, and we've put Belmar out on the wing. Belmar, you know, up until the Swope game, he hadn't contributed an assist or a goal, but he'd had a lot of, you know, beating defenders out wide, getting a man, getting a ball in, but no one was just connecting. So I feel like Belmar and then Rios with his 7 goals have started to fit in well. It's just with Lancaster not finally coming off of an injury, we've seen him. He got a goal against Swope. He started this past weekend or this past week against Tormenta too and got himself a goal. So I think he's starting to find his footing, and I think we'll start to see him and Rios up top more in a 4-4-2 with Belmar out wide. And then one of either Ropapa Mensa or Alan Wynn, who was out most of the beginning of the season with a concussion and a couple other injuries that kind of kept him out. So one of the issues we were just having was, you know, not having that second winger to put out there.
Cool. I mean, this is Alex, by the way. I had a couple of questions kind of about Gary Smith's tactics this season. I know last season there was a big emphasis, you know, I assume it was on purpose on defending. Nashville is one of the best defenses in the USL. And it's not that you guys have been bad defensively this season, but it does seem to be, I guess, less of an emphasis. Nashville scoring more. So I was just kind of curious if he's kind of changed his approach at all, or if it's just the players that you guys have on the roster fit what he wants to do a little bit better this year.
Yeah, I would say he has changed his approach a little bit more. If you guys keep an eye out on the weekend, you'll see that the fullbacks are pushed a bit higher up the field. If we're playing the 4-4-2, there's a lot of times where it's basically only the two center backs that are back there. He's had, you know, on the left side, it's either Taylor Washington or Justin Davis. And on the right side, it's been a rotation of Kosuke Kimura or Darnell King. But both of those fullbacks are going to push high up the field. They're going to, you know, press really well, try to win the ball back. I will say probably another thing that's hurt us defensively is there has been times where Baluak and Yode hasn't started every single game. There's been a couple games where we've seen just LaGrassa and Reed in the center of the park, and I think that hurts us defensively, not having that six there that can, you know, break up play and intercept balls. So I think that has been a detriment. And also, we have been, you know, we've had some defensive rotation. We've been rotating two goalkeepers in and out. So I think that also is been a, there hasn't been necessarily a set back five.
Gotcha. That's interesting because I think I personally was a little bit worried about Nashville kind of this season and with the transition to MLS if he didn't kind of change his approach a little bit, because I felt like last year you guys had more attacking talent and you just couldn't figure out what to do with them, and so it was kind of encouraging to see you guys starting to put some goals on the board this year. I have a quick listener question. I'm going to rephrase it a little bit because you've already kind of talked about Rios and Lancaster's start to the season. But the question is essentially, you know, everybody was put on alert when you guys picked up Rios and Lancaster in the same offseason, you know, basically the two top goal scorers from last season now on the same team. Do you think that the two are going to play well together once Lancaster does come back from injury?
I think they will. I think that Lancaster is a guy that likes to drop a little bit deeper and pick up the ball, and he does have a bit of a pass on him. Whereas, you know, Rios is a bit more of a target forward. He does make some really good runs and really smart runs, but he's able to bring people into play. He's a big guy, really good on his feet, really good in the air, and then having the guys around him to be able to play guys around. From what we saw in the preseason, and that's the most that we saw them together, which was very little, I think they're going to work really well together. But at the end of the day, if it's a situation where we have to play with one of those guys coming off the bench, you know, last year we had guys like just Tucker Hume, who had a great preseason, who's had a decent start to the season coming off the bench, but having a guy like either Lancaster or Rios coming off the bench in, you know, the 60th minute is not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, I mean, you know, champagne problem, I guess.
that definitely is. But I'm really interested to see, we've seen them start to, or toward the end of last season, using Repapa Mensa more out wide as a winger, either in a 4-2-4 or a 4-3-3. And I think he plays really well out there. He can come off the bench. He's one of those players that, you know, is able to quickly find his place in the game and get on the field. So, I mean, I think that there's a lot of tactical flexibility with these guys.
Gotcha. Who is maybe like an X factor for Nashville who we haven't really talked about that could kind of play a big part in the match on Saturday?
I feel like one of the unsung heroes, and who's probably our player of last month, is Matt LaGrassa. Last season, we saw him used a lot out on the wing, but he's really a box-to-box midfielder that can, you know, occasionally play as a 10. But this year, he's added a few more goals to his game. He's been used in the center, and he's just one of those guys that can win the ball back really quickly and higher up the field and then turn play. So he's someone that, you know, definitely is kind of under the radar. And then I am interested to see if we see Derek Jones play, which you guys may be familiar with from his time at Bethlehem Steel. He did start on Tuesday and had an okay game. More just, you know, he's getting back into match fitness. He wasn't necessarily starting every game up there. He was used a lot, you know, off the bench at the Union. So I think seeing the, you know, chemistry that we could see with both him and Akinyode have been played together previously, it'll be interesting to see if he starts on Saturday or comes off the bench.
Yeah, that will be interesting. I think he's a good player. I think he's going to be, you know, once he fits in and gets some chemistry with Nashville, I think he's going to be a really good player. He's one of those tweeners kind of between, he's, you know, probably too good for USL, but not quite good enough for MLS. So he's, you know, hopefully going to find his stride.
Yeah, it'll be, I mean, he's still a young guy, so I think.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, he's only 22, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. Yeah, but I definitely get what you're saying. We're like too good for USL, but not necessarily good enough for like top level MLS where he's getting a lot of minutes. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, that's all the questions I have. So if you have some questions for us, we'd be happy to answer, maybe.
So, I mean, we all know where you guys sit at the table. What do you think has been your biggest issue this year? I know you guys picked up Dominic Aduro in the offseason. What do you think? Where have you guys struggled the most?
Where do we start?
Listen to the first part of the podcast? I would definitely say if there's one main issue, it's been our midfield has been pretty consistently dreadful. I mean, I'll say too that we've missed opportunities we should have put in the net, and we've given opportunities that were a little too easy to put in the net as well. But what would you say, Alex?
Yeah, I was basically going to say similar. Like, we have issues at all three levels of the field. But I think if we had to pick one that we could fix and it would, you know, probably drastically improve our results, it would be the middle of the field. I think a little bit of it is tactics with the new coach, and a little bit of it is personnel. We have our defensive midfielder has been out. Kevon George, I think the last game he played was maybe in Charleston, which was several weeks ago. Actually, maybe more than a month ago now, because I think that was early April. So he's been out, and then another midfielder that's played a lot of minutes, Mark Hill, has been injured as well. Those two guys, I think, are the best midfield pair we have, and they have both been out at the same time. So we're playing two guys who I don't think particularly fit well together, and I don't think our tactical approach is very committed to like winning the midfield battle. So that's our biggest issue, but we have issues at the back end, at the front as well. So,
so I think a lot of our listeners are going to have this question: how's Andrew Gutman doing?
I forgot about that. I guess he was loaned to y'all and then loaned to us. Is that how that worked out? I think that's how that worked
out. Well, sort of.
Yeah, that's it's basically the Fire being, you know, Nelson Rodriguez wanted his way.
Yeah. I think he's been quality for us. I mean, he's scored 2 goals. I want to say he's maybe had an assist or 2 as well. He's been exceptional on the offensive side of things, I think. He's definitely shown to be a young player at times. And he's left a little bit to desire on the defensive side of things, I would say. I think he's been one of the more brighter spots of the season, I think is a way of describing him. Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think he has probably the highest potential of anybody on the team, being, 21, 22, whatever he is, just out of school. You can tell he's a little bit naive to the professional game a little bit at times. He's cleaned that up a little bit here lately, but early in the season he was a little slow to react and, put himself in some poor situations due to that. But, the way we play, he is very crucial to our attack. If he's not getting forward and combining well with whoever is playing on the left wing, lately we've been playing more of a 3-4-3, so there's not really a left wing, but the left forward, whatever. If he's not getting forward and combining and taking shots and trying to put in crosses and cutbacks, we're probably going to struggle to score. So he's a very important player for us. And it's weird because, he's a left back or a left wing back, but he's so attack minded and he's so skilled in the final third that you almost forget that he's a defender at times, because he doesn't spend a ton of time in the defensive half, especially when we have the ball.
Gotcha. So, looking forward to the game on Saturday, what do you guys need to do well in order to get a result at Nashville?
I think to me, the biggest thing is to just not get dominated in the midfield. If we can, when we went down to Tampa Bay a couple weeks ago, we actually played pretty well. It was a little bit disjointed at times, but we kept pretty organized at the back. And I think it was because our midfield played a good game. So, I think if we can just not get totally dominated in the middle of the field and not have sloppy turnovers, because we're not good in transition because of, players like Gutman, and on the other side, Joel Johnson, they play so high up the field that, our center backs get put on islands and they're not great in those situations. So if we can avoid those situations as much as possible, I think we'll get, have a much better chance of getting at least a point.
Gotcha. And then what do you think that Charlotte needs to, what do you think there's something that Nashville can exploit against Charlotte?
Goose, you want to take this one?
You gave me the easy one, Alex. Something that they can exploit is really, I'm trying to pinpoint one thing. I think continued chances and not letting us get in a rhythm. I think, honestly, the biggest issue we've had is teams, I think when we feel comfortable, essentially when clubs give us the ball and we think we're good, we pass it back and forth, we do this, that, and the other, and then our midfielder will lose possession, and then he'll cut down the wing on a cross, and they cross it in. I think crosses as well have been a glaring issue for us, because we haven't been marking very well on them, which really scares me with Rios. I have very, very distinct memories of him playing for a team that will not be named. But I think if we're allowed to get in a rhythm, if Nashville pressures us, that's going to be the most difficult thing to deal with. That's what I'll say.
Transition moments are just not a strength of ours. for, like, you know, like we've already said, for tactical reasons and for personnel reasons.
Gotcha. All right, that's good. That's good to know. That's good to know. Are you guys making the trip over to Nashville?
No.
Yeah, sadly, sadly not.
I would love to go up to a game in Nashville. I've never been to Nashville before, but I've heard good things. We had some people go down there last year, and they had a blast. I think it was a rainy, cold night, but
yeah,
I've heard good things.
Yeah, when we played you guys last year, it was middle of April, and it ended up being 30 degrees,
yeah.
Which is completely outside of the, you know, realm of usual temperature for the city in that time of year.
Mm.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll have to, next time you guys are able to, let us know. We'll take care of you guys.
Yeah, appreciate it. We'd love to make the trip. We're I guess this is our last season, so maybe it'll have to be a preseason or something.
Or Open Cup.
Open Cup, yeah. Well, yeah. We'll see.
Well.
I think we have to win a game in the Open Cup first.
Yeah, maybe we'll play Nashville too. Maybe that. I don't know. Oh.
Yeah, but that's all I got.
Cool. I have a couple of quick questions from Wes Bowling. And they're kind of for all of us, I think. It's kind of one of it's Charlotte specific, but the other one I think is for both of us. But the first one is, which player most needs to step up for Charlotte to get a result? And I don't know that it's necessary. I don't want to point out a particular player just because I have no idea what we're going to do with the lineup, considering we played 120 minutes in the middle of the week plus penalties. And, you know, we have three or four guys who are injured and could be coming back hopefully any day now. So I'll just say whoever is in the, you know, we'll probably line up in a 3-4-3. So those two midfielders, I think one of them needs to kind of step up and be a little bit dominant in the middle of the field, you know, at least defensively. If we have Kevon George back there, it's going to be him. You know, if it's Mikel Maria, you know, somebody who can cut out passes and kind of protect the center backs and keep them from having to go into those one-on-one situations where they don't excel. That's my answer to that. Do you have a different answer, Ben?
I would say I think one way we can really kind of do a 180 and move up the table, hopefully, in some ways, is if Enzo Martinez really kind of turns a corner and finally realizes his role in the find some form, is what I'll try to say. Yeah,
yeah, that's true.
I think he's a player I feel like he's taken some strides, but just hasn't figured out exactly how to work in our system and hasn't unlocked that potential yet. If that does happen, I think he can really rally the troops and get things going for it. So yeah, Enzo is for me.
All right. The other one, which you've already kind of done this, but we'll ask it again. It's describe the season so far in one word or phrase. I guess we can all answer this one.
I'll let you guys go first, because I think Wes is he's the voice of the he does the radio broadcast.
Yep, that's
Wes
right.
Wes is looking for help on his prep.
Hi, gotcha. I think for us it would be maybe unknown expectations, but still disappointing, which is kind of funny to think about. But it's, you know, I think we all expected it to be a little slow, but this is getting ridiculous.
Yeah, I think that's it's definitely a darkest timeline type of scenario. Community fans will know what that is, otherwise it'll just be weird. But I guess I could just say that, yeah, darkest timeline. That I'll just say that. I wasn't even meaning it to be that way, but
yeah, I think that's spot on right there.
Yeah, this is it just feels like a weird nightmare. It's not great.
Do you feel like Troy walking into the party with all of the pizzas?
Like if I were to walk into the season now and be like, wait, this is going on. We just lost to this team, this, that, and the other. Yeah, I would feel like Troy walking into the party. That's for sure.
Oh, man. Well, we really appreciate you joining us, Jonathan. Where can our listeners find your work, both written and the podcast?
Yeah, you can find our all of our written work together at speedwaysoccer.com. And you can also find the podcast there. And you can find me on Twitter at jslatessp. You can find all their stuff there. And then the podcast at Soccer Speedway. And then for our listeners, which I know everybody on Talking Jacks is going to know where to find you guys, but where can they find both of you?
I am Alex underscore 55. And I tweet about mainly things other than the independents from that account for the most part. But that's if you want my thoughts on the NBA and all kinds of other things, you can follow me for sure.
Kemba Walker super fan is how I would describe his Twitter for the time being. Yeah. Hopefully longer.
Maybe that might be coming to an end. Well, I'll always be a Kemba Walker super fan, but we'll see.
But I can be found on Twitter at the Soccer Goose is where I can be found on the Twitterverse. I don't really tweet about the NBA, but I do tweet Seinfeld GIFs and probably tweet way too often when I'm watching matches. So, yeah, there's that.
Sounds great.
All right. Well, again, hope you have a good night and good luck on Saturday.
All right. Thanks. You guys too.
Take care.
Hey everybody, thanks for listening to this episode of Speedway Soccer Pod. Be sure to check out speedwaysoccer.com for more written content and the build-up to Nashville's match against Charlotte Independence. And stay tuned next week for another podcast recapping the game and previewing their trip to Birmingham. As always, thanks to our sponsors, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get custom scarves for your team or group at roughneckscarves.com. Also, thanks to Golden Goal Press, the best choice for you to get custom shirts, hats, mugs, and other items for yourself or your organization. Check out their amazing products at a fraction of the price of other places at goldengoalpress.com. As always, this is Speedway Soccer Pod. Thanks for listening.